I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Good afternoon. Welcome in to Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Big show planned for you today. Davey Martinez, the manager of the Nationals, joins us in about 17 minutes, just after 2:20. Tommy Shepard, the GM of the Red Hot Wizards, who have won five straight, is on the show at 6 o'clock. What's up, Danny?
Hell of a day outside, my friend. A little pep in my step. I woke up this morning feeling very happy. I was in a very good mood. And I tried to figure out why, because every morning is the worst morning of my life. Mornings suck. They're incorrect. They're terrible. I hate them so much. Nights pummel them. And I'm trying to figure out what it was. And then I remembered, oh, that's right. My Washington Wizards have won five straight games. And they beat the Lakers last night. I know they're under, man. That's still LeBron James, dude. That's still Denny Avdija and Rui Hachimura trying to check the second greatest player ever to live, in my opinion, late night last night. He wanted to win that game. He didn't get to. That's delightful.
Yeah, we'll get into the Wiz early and often today because they are the story in D.C. sports. We'll also cover the Nats quite a bit as well. As we mentioned, Davey is going to be on the show within the next 20 minutes. There's a lot of ground to cover with him. And today's actually the first day that you can place the franchise tag on players. So there is plenty to discuss on the Brandon Scherff front. There's a report from the Washington Post yesterday that Washington would consider doing that. That means almost $20 million for a guard, which seems crazy. Is that something they should actually consider? All of that coming up on the show today, which is presented, as always, by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. I spent some time in Wegmans today, Danny. Wegmans is always an entertaining place to shop at. Always fun. You walk down the aisle where they've got like all the fresh fish on ice, and they've got live lobsters swimming around in a tank. And if you're a kid, which I had two of them with me on this trip with my wife, that's a little bit like an amusement park. Like, we didn't have to buy tickets. We didn't go to the aquarium or anything like that. But there is something to be said if you can put yourself back in the mode of being 2 years old again. You remember when you would just walk down that aisle with all those animals, essentially, that are laying there? And you don't have to think about the fact that they're going to be eaten by someone. You don't know the difference as a kid. But I held Reagan up to the little aquarium. She's looking at the lobster. She was transfixed. It was an experience being at Wegmans today, walking around, enjoying ourselves. I wasn't able to buy anything, to eat anything that I would have loved to have purchased. That's not what I'm allowed to do. But it was still cool to see foods that are available that other people get to eat that could potentially be delicious when they consume them.
I see what you mean. I do this now, and this is, it's similar, if I may, to the following phenomenon. I'm married, incredibly happy, just so pleased, so grateful that somebody can tolerate me. I love when my friends who are not married or not betrothed or not dating, like, start dating other people. I get secondhand excitement. Something similar, I think, applies for food, too, where I'm like, you're going to eat that? It's probably going to taste so good. I'll have some celery because I'm pudgy. You know what I mean? Like, I get some secondhand joy knowing that someone else is going to experience taste. It hurts that I'm not, but it still feels nice knowing that someone's going to get, I'm going to get secondhand taste joy because someone else is going to eat something good.
The thing that I love to do, and it annoys Allison to no end, but when I'm not eating things, and I'm being healthy, and she is eating whatever she wants, I watch her eat it. It's like this weird, creepy guy.
Yeah.
You know, he's like in movies where he's like mumbling under his breath, or you know, kind of saying things very quietly. You don't know what he's saying as he's watching someone from afar. Very
squirrely.
Creepy. Exactly. Yeah. But I'll say, you know, hey, eat that donut. And she'll be like, I don't want a donut. And I'm like, you have to eat the donut. I don't want a donut.
Yeah, I know you do.
She's like, don't do this thing that you're going to start doing again now that because you can't control yourself because for 16 days you haven't been able to eat whatever you want. Leave me alone. So then I have to watch her eat the donut, and I just get so much joy out of it, and I'm sitting there licking my lips. She hates it. She thinks it's the weirdest thing in the world. But I want to see people eat the things that I can't eat.
That's right.
It's probably not a healthy thing that I'm like
no.
shoveling these things. I'm like, oh, well, I can't eat this piece of cake, but my two-year-old can, so hey, you eat this cake. I just want everyone else to eat the things I can't eat. I don't know what you want me to tell you.
The downside of that, and this is when I was like hardcore first go around with the MP and I was losing weight. It was awesome. But like, you know, you get cravings, you get hungry. And I made a piece of toast for my son. I think he was like 3 and a half at this point. And I made like toast with butter on it. And he's like, I don't want it. You know, like does the dumb thing that kids do. Like he literally asks for something and then decides he doesn't want it 2 seconds later, which is blood boiling in normal circumstances. I sit there through gritted teeth. I think I even told you the story on air. And I said, I would kill to eat that. Eat the toast! And he starts, like, crying because I've now turned into some sort of goblin monster that's, like, yelling at him about some terrible white bread toast or whatever. And I'm sitting there going, I would do anything! Anything! And he's like, what is the matter with you? He's just so afraid. I was like, I'm sorry. Daddy, sorry. Daddy, sorry. You don't have to eat it.
Who's the child here, Daddy? The Wizards are no longer playing like children, Danny. Let's start there.
Go ahead.
127-124 last night in overtime. Bloody. Bradley Beal and Russell Westbrook carrying the club as was drawn up. So this is what I anticipated. Everyone was angry at me. Everyone screamed at me. But when I said, I think this team could be a little bit more fun. I think this team's going to be a little bit more competitive. They're going to be just more frisky, and I'll enjoy watching them. This is what I envisioned. Not that they'd win 5 straight games or anything like that, but this process playing out. Beal last night scores 33, including scoring on 3 consecutive possessions late in overtime to get that 3-point win in the extra period. Russell Westbrook poured in 32. He had 6 points in overtime as well. Washington has done this now throughout this winning streak. They rallied from down 17, and if you went to bed, you missed a lot of fun. You missed Rui looking uber athletic, defending multiple positions, taking the ball to the rim. You missed Denny Avdija making a huge shot. Big shot Denny from the wing, hitting a 3-pointer to get the good guys a late lead. And you missed a ridiculous foul call. I don't know if you've seen the video of this, Danny, but last night in the closing seconds of that game, LeBron James went to the rim, and he got the call to go get an opportunity at the line that never should have happened. He gets the most ridiculous calls at the end of games. He's too big. He's too damn big to help him out. He's 6'8". 270 or whatever he is, please don't blow a whistle because he lowers his shoulder to try to run over a player like he's picking up inches on fourth and goal as a fullback. And you're calling a foul on Russell Westbrook? I mean, all those little breaks, all the things you could want if you're LeBron, and still he misses a free throw at the end of the game. Beal misses a three. They go to overtime, and Washington's able to persevere.
Scott Brooks deserves credit here. Now, I think I've been fair. I call it like I see it, okay? There are things that have frustrated me over recent years and over the beginning of the season. There are things that I don't care for. But the balance is when something goes well and something goes right, credit is due here. I thought they had a great plan for LeBron James. Early, basically through 3 quarters, you said, let's just do our best. Let's have Rui try. Let's have Denny try. Let's have anybody who wants to try on LeBron James. Give him different looks. We'll try it, okay? And LeBron did what the second greatest player of all time does. He tuned him up. He's in the post. He's running the break. He's making pocket passes. He's slinging it across the court. This is Showtime LeBron killing people because he's amazing. Starting in the fourth quarter and starting in overtime, they said, not you. It ain't going to be you. And they threw a different junk defense at him. Dude, they blitzed him. They ran extra guys at him. They, got him off of his spot. All sorts of different things at weird times. Every possession, it seemed like it was something different, and he got out of sorts, had a terrible ending to the game. And they said, if Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, or if, Montrezl Harrell, I guess it wasn't in the game late, but if one of these Jags, if Marc Gasol, the ghost of Marc Gasol, beats us, so what? We can live with that. We're not going to let LeBron do it. I thought that was brilliant. I thought it was excellent. It was good. It was one of those things where you go, oh, yeah, you're allowed to make those kinds of adjustments. I thought Denny Avdija was great. I thought he was great. You look at the stats, whatever. Had a huge clutch three off a Westbrook drive late in that ball game. That was massive. There was a momentum for the Lakers. Drills a three. Got seemed like every huge rebound he got and checked the greatest basketball player alive to as good as you can do it. I was really impressed with the kids there with Denny and Rui had another solid game, as you referenced, man. That was fun.
This is what I want. I don't know if they'll make the playoffs. I don't even care that much because, honestly, if they do, I don't think they go very far. But I wanted a competitive, hardworking team that had a chance against good clubs and a brand of basketball that was fun for me to watch. I didn't think the last few years were. They've been bad for a while, and I knew they were going to be bad. I wanted something different. If it was still bad, fine, but let's try this. Russell Westbrook, by the way, we took our medicine. We said, whether it was a little over a week ago or more now, that he wasn't playing well, and we both thought it was partially because he was hurt. But this trade isn't working out well, and Wall unequivocally is having the better season. I mean, Russell Westbrook slowly is coming around. Now, I don't think he's just going to stop turning the ball over. I think that is part of his game at this point. That just comes with the territory. He is a little bit out of control, and he's a bull in a china shop, and with that comes some good, some effort things, and a lot of bad. And he turns the ball over too much. I'd like him to mitigate some of those. I can't have 7 and 8 turnover games, 9 turnover games. Cut that down to 4 or 5, but that part of his game isn't going anywhere. So if you can't live with that, then he's just not your guy. He's going to take some bad shots. I have gotten to understand this. I think he's done a better job at that recently. A couple of games ago, he was super efficient, 11 of 17 from the floor. Weren't as many pull-your-hair-out moments last night. But you're starting to see, when he pours in 32 to go with 13 boards and 9 assists, I mean, there is a value to him on the floor and off the floor that makes up for a lot of that. And the detractors that didn't like the trade or don't like him won't acknowledge that, and they don't have to. But yeah, Rui Hachimura,
right.
I saw this quote a couple different places. I think Chase Hughes was one of the guys that put it out there. But Rui Hachimura said, Russell Westbrook asked each player recently, the role players, to define their roles in front of the team. And they were at a practice, and he kind of stopped whatever they were doing, and each guy went around and defined their roles. And several players have cited that moment as part of this newfound clarity that they have that has helped to lead to this winning streak. Now, is this sustainable? No, they're not going to win every game, obviously. They're not probably going to beat the Clippers tonight, I don't think. But are they a better team? Have they turned a corner? Do they look like they figured something out? Yes. And I think both on the floor and off the floor, Westbrook is a huge reason why.
Now, he bricked a bunch of free throws last night, which drives me crazy.
He can't hit free throws.
I'm incensed by it. I'll put it aside. Two things happened last night. Number one, he airballed a layup. I won't unsee that. That will drive me crazy. And the masonry that he's throwing up when it comes to free throws. Whatever. He went to the line 11 times. That tells you the entire story.
What did he hit, by the way? 5?
I think it was 6 for 11. That tells you the game story. When he goes to the line 11 times, it means what? He's not getting fouled shooting jump shots. People are they're delighted. They're doing Sound of Music, musical shtick when he's shooting mid-range jump shots or deep jump shots. Defenses will gladly give it to him whenever he wants. He's basically stopped taking those for the most part in rhythm, fine, whatever, pull-up jumper, I can live with it. When he's going to the rack, he can get by people. He can get to the foul line. That tells you everything. Defense collapsed, he kicks it to somebody like he did on that Avdija bucket that I've referenced a couple times, or Beal, or Bertans in the opposite corner for decent-looking shots. When he's going to the basket with the reckless abandon and the explosion and athleticism that only a handful of guys have in this league, that's when he's effective. Turnovers are going to come with that. You're right. Everything you said about him is correct. I'd like those mitigated, but that's kind of cost of doing business. It's like having a guy that throws 100 that's occasionally wild. Sometimes you hit the mascot. All right, I'll deal with it. The good with the bad there. When he's going to the foul line that many times, that's the good Russell Westbrook, and that's the guy that I signed up for.
Last night, 13 of 25 from the floor. Beal was 12 of 24. They both played 44 minutes. Now, I have a hard time believing Westbrook turns around and plays at all tonight, and if he does, a ton tonight. He hadn't been playing much as far as the back-to-backs go. They are feeling themselves. They're looking for 6 in a row. They're trying to get back in the hunt, so for all of those reasons, he might want to play tonight. I don't know. I don't think he's going to. What do you think? I mean, coming off of 32 points and 14 boards and 9 dimes in 44 minutes, 25 shots, That's going to be tough to ramp him back up, I think.
Basically 12 hours later, and to be honest with you, against an excellent basketball team in the Clippers, they're nasty. You know, it may be one of those, we could preserve our good feelings here. We can lose a game and not really feel like it diminished our winning streak and our good ways because we didn't have Russ going. I would guess he probably sits, and I might even be the one to sit him, to be honest with you. I'm not going to jeopardize this newfound wellspring of health in his legs. I know I generally can't stand the amount of rest that some of these guys are taking. I understand it. Maybe you could rest in game or, you know, not play when you're down 35 or whatever at some of these points. But going back-to-back, excellent team tonight, I would guess he doesn't play. But I haven't heard anything.
A couple other guys real quick just to shout out. And we've done this throughout this winning streak.
It's fun, man.
Watch these games. Rui Hachimura continues to play really well. Almost 40 minutes last night. Efficient. 6 of 8 from the floor. Hit a three-pointer. Went to the line 3 times. 15 points and 6 boards. And I continue to like what Robin Lopez is providing. I was so done and over him recently. And he's still, I can take him in small doses. He's
offensively,
tough to watch.
It's so sad.
It's very hard to watch.
It's tough.
He looks like a, you know, like a baby giraffe taking his first steps at all times. However, 13 points last night for him off of the bench in 30 minutes and defends the rim. I mean, if you're looking at plus-minus margin, he was plus 16 last night. There was nobody else on the team that was better than plus 9. When he was on the floor, they played much better defense than when he wasn't. Speaking of defense, will the Nats have enough of it this year? We'll talk about their pitching staff and their lineup with the skipper of the ball club. Davey Martinez joins us next right here on Grant and Danny from spring training. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Going to the BetQL hotline now, presented by BetQL. Bet smarter and beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com to welcome onto the show our friend and friend of D.C. because he's a World Series champion and he brought this town a title. Davey Martinez, the skipper of the Washington Nationals, back at spring training where pitchers and catchers have reported. We're closing in on exhibition games. Davey, thanks for joining us on G&D. How are you? How's the warm weather of Florida treating you?
Hey, what's up, guys? Man, it's been great out here. I left in the nick of time in Nashville. It got down in the negative, so I'm happy to be here. Happy to get started.
Good deal, man. What's it like just seeing the boys again? How are you viewing last year? Because there's some good. Juan Soto hit a million. Trey Turner was unbelievable. And then some guys didn't have the kind of years that they would want. How do you view last year? If it's good, emphasize it. If it's not, let's not talk about it.
Hey, no, for me, you know, we learned a lot about our season last year. You know, for the most part, you said, you know, Trey had an unbelievable year. Juan, you know, was incredible. We had some injuries. We got things taken care of. You know, Strasburg had an injury. We were able to get it taken care of. And he's back. He's healthy. He looks really good. So, you know, what I talked today to the boys about putting 2020 on the back burner and starting fresh and kind of having some kind of normalcy inside of our camp. With that being said, we all know what's going on in the world. You know, it's tough to forget about. While we step into that clubhouse and step on that field, let's remember that we're here to play baseball and have fun. And hopefully we all stay safe.
Davey, I want to start with the rotation with you, and we'll stick with the big three for a moment. You know, Max has been so dominant, so reliable as a Cy Young candidate for years. Last couple of seasons, now he's in the final year of the 7-year deal, getting closer to 40, he's shown a little bit more of a human side where he does get banged up. He does miss some starts. You mentioned Stras only pitched a couple innings for you. Patrick Corbin last year went from being one of the best lefties in baseball to giving up the most hits in the league. I mean, give me an idea of your confidence just in those three guys getting back to where they need to be. And then if you would give me a thought just on last year and maybe what went off the rails a little bit, because you're going to go as far as they take you, obviously.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you know, you're talking about our three horses that we have. You know, I really, you know, looking back at last year, I think that the stop, you know, the stoppage, you know, we got them cranked up. We had to stop. There was a lot of uncertainties. All of a sudden, we come back on spring training 2.0. You know, I think a lot of that had to do with their routines and what they're used to doing. And it was tough to get going. Towards the end of the year last year, I started seeing Patrick's velo come back up. I started seeing Max, you know, his intensity, his velo go back up. And then obviously, you know, Strasburg getting hurt. So You know, I'm looking forward to watching these guys come to spring training, have some, like I said, have some kind of normalcy, have a regular spring training and get started on time, you know, and get ready for opening day.
Davey, on paper, this is the best bullpen I can remember this club has had. It just, I'd love for you to go into that. A lot of guys with closing experience. How are you planning on maybe defining some roles, or is it just game by game? It sounds like you got a lot of guys that want to pull the rope in the same direction there.
Definitely. I talk to these guys individually a lot. You know, I talked to Brad Hamm when we signed him. These guys want to win. That's all they worry about, you know. And he said, from you know, these, most of these guys from seventh inning on, they said they're going to be readily available, but, and that's kind of nice. But what I do like, Riz and I talked a lot this winter about depth. And as you know, we have that now, and that's kind of nice because in order to win a championship, you're going to use tons of guys. Guys are going to go down, and you know, and I feel like now we got some depth in our bullpen that can help us, you know, whether it's the beginning of the season or early season, mid-season, late season. So that's nice to have these guys here.
Davey Martinez, manager of the Nationals, with us on Grant and Danny, your flagship home for Nats baseball. You can hear every game all season long right here with Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler on the Fan. Davey, I want to get into the bullpen a little more. Do you still believe in a closer, a setup man, maybe a righty and a lefty setup man, the traditional way of going through a season with a bullpen? We've seen how you manage in the playoffs, and I think it's how you have to manage. There is no roles. You just kind of throw the guy out there and ride him as far as you can, and it helped win a World Series. But you can't do that for 162, as you know. I mean, do you believe in a closer? Like, is Rainey, is Hand both competing for that role, or is it just a, you know, fireman? Whoever's best against lefties, whoever's best in this role is going to get the call. How are you going to do this?
Yeah, you know, in a perfect world, you want to, you know, have these, put these guys in roles, definitely, you know, especially early on in the season. But I've had many conversations with these guys, and we talk a lot about, hey, you know, there may be a situation, you know, in a high leverage situation in a close game where Brad Hand in the eighth inning has to pitch against, you know, some of their better hitters, the middle of their lineup, you know, against lefties. So we could do things that way. And then we have, you know, the Raineys and the Hudsons and the Will Harrises that could finish the ninth. So we're going to really hone in on different things and how we want to treat this thing. I know that, you know, the back end of our bullpen looks really good and really strong. So we just want to get them started, build their innings up and get them ready for the season. But I think these guys are ready for anything. Like I said, after talking to them, they're ready. They're ready to pitch whenever they need them. So that's always good to know. And that's always good to have in your pocket.
Davey, I know it's incredibly early, but also knowing you, you've been scribbling these things down on cocktail napkins in the offseason and texting Riz ideas. Who's going to hit behind Juan Soto? What sort of lineup things have you kind of envisioned to protect the kid?
Oh, gosh. You know, I wake up and, you know, in the mornings, I dream about, you know, our lineup and seeing the, you know, the Turners, the Sotos, the Bell, Schwarber, Starlin. I mean, you know, it pretty strong. So I definitely put a bunch of lineups together. We talked about maybe giving Robles an opportunity to lead off and being able to push those other guys back. That could be nice, you know. So how we're going to work it, you know, it's still up in the air. But what I do like is we have some options, you know. And like I said, you know, we got some guys that can protect Soto. Even though I really feel like he's such a good hitter, he doesn't need any protection. But we do have some guys that could drive in some runs, you know, behind him or in front of him. So that's good.
Davey, I got to tell you, I whittle the lineup out on my own napkins as well. I don't have the power to actually make it happen like you do. But I do that sometimes, and I've never come up with Robles at the top of the order. When I first hear that, my thought is, great idea to try to get him going. I mean, he is a massive ingredient this year. You have to get more out of him in his age 23 season. I mean, you may not use the term sink or swim, but this is kind of the year where he's got to show he is who we think he is. Maybe the best way to get him going might be to put him at the top of the lineup, but there's some risk there. He hit 220 with a 293 on base last year. That doesn't work at the top of the order. What are you thinking with Robles as a number one guy in a lineup? Take us into that.
Well, you know, he's a guy that could get on base, you know, steal bases, get things going. You know, he worked really hard to revamp his swing over the wintertime. We talked to him a lot about just putting the ball in play, taking his walks, accepting his walks, and getting on base, you know, for him, You know, it's all about hitting doubles. I mean, his kid's strong enough to hit home runs. We know that. He hit 17, and they'll come. You know, we want him to swing at balls in the strike zone a little bit more. He chases a lot of balls outside the strike zone. And I think, you know, possibly by leading him off and getting him up there early, that he's going to get pitches to hit, and that might help him a little bit, you know. Against left-handed pitching, he's actually not that bad. He works good at bats, you know, hits the ball well. So we could do something like that as well, you know, let him lead off against lefties and maybe possibly let Schwarber lead off against righties. Who knows, you know? I mean, I've thrown all of this stuff around. You know, our analytical guys are looking at different possibilities of how this could work. But like I said, we got a lot of options. You know, the other thing is, you know, let Trey just do what he does and lead off. But if I can move Trey to two or three, I would like that a lot. I mean, Trey's matured a lot as far as a hitter, and I think he'd be good in the two or three hole.
Presumably you move him down, that means Soto would still be behind him. So, like, if he's hitting third, maybe Soto's batting cleanup at that point, or would he be second? Where are you seeing that?
I would see Soto probably batting cleanup, yeah.
Okay.
It all depends if we get a couple guys up there, you know.
Sure, makes sense. You're trying to get guys on base so that when he hits it 500 feet, it matters a little more. Right. Makes a lot of sense. How about the two new additions, if you could get into those guys? You know Schwarber from your time in Chicago. Josh Bell, at one point in time, was an all-star, hit almost 40 home runs. Did you guys do enough, do you think, to go from wherever you were offensively last year, which wasn't satisfactory for you or Mike or anybody else, to where you need to be? Do you think those guys get you there?
I really believe so. I do. I mean, we looked at these guys. We sat down in wintertime. We write so many things down on paper, and guys that we turn in the list, and Mike and I talk about different guys that could possibly be available. And, you know, we talked about, you know, possibly acquiring Josh Bell, who's a switch hitter. Like you said, he had a monster year, was an all-star. Last year, you know, put nothing into last year. But we feel like we got a qualified middle lineup guy that's going to hit home runs, that's going to put the ball playing, drive in runs, which is really nice. I didn't know him. You know, I knew of him. I watched him play. I love this kid's attitude. I really do. I mean, he's everything you want in that clubhouse and on that field, man. He just wants to win. He's hungry. This is a breath of fresh air for him, so we're excited to watch him go out there and compete every day. Schwarber, who I've known for a very long time, just a flat-out winner. I mean, he loves the game. He loves to compete. He wants to win every day. He doesn't care where he hits in the lineup. He just wants to help this team win. And when you get guys like that, guys that have that kind of energy, man, it's fun to watch them out there play every day and communicate with other players. You know, these guys, like I said, these guys were sought after when Schwarber got non-tendered. It was basically a quick text to Riz, Schwarber, and Riz got on it and we got it done. So yeah, that's pretty awesome.
That's pretty sweet. David Martinez with us here on Grant and Danny. David, the curse of success a little bit. If you guys were going to lose 110 games, you just say, Carter, you're the third baseman, kick it around, swing, do whatever the hell you want. You'll get better. You're the future. But you guys are competing for divisions, for championships coming off of 2019. How do you balance that, especially knowing that you got Starlin Castro, position flexibility there? And Luis Garcia, I thought, showed really well last year, give you an option there at second to move guys around. How do you treat Carter this year? And, you know, is that your guy to start with? How long a leash does he have? Go into Carter Kieboom a little bit for me.
Yeah, we value Carter a lot. I mean, here's a guy that for us, you know, he was one of our, he still is our top prospect, regardless of, you know, and he had a rough go at it in the big leagues, but, you know, I talk to Riz a lot, and we talk about some of the really good players that struggled in the big leagues their first, you know, 50, 75 games. You know, they didn't give up on them. You know, I mentioned before, you know, my first 52 games in the big leagues, I hit 139. You know, I thought I had a pretty good career. So I'm not going to give up on Carter. I'm not. I said that before. You know, I tell him all the time, hey, you're a third baseman until you prove me otherwise. You know, you're going to go out there and you're going to compete and just go out there and have fun. And, you know, I truly believe he can do it. I really do. And so far, you know, he's gotten here early. He's taken some ground balls. He's been hitting. He's another guy to revamp the swing a little bit. But he looks great. I mean, he put on a couple pounds of muscle But he's moving really well over at third base. We talked a lot. Bogey talked to him a lot about getting a little quicker on his feet, and he really took it to heart. He did it, and he looks really, really good. I mean, we talked about him today, how the work paid off for him this winter, and hopefully he carries it over. We start these games, and he continues to develop.
Davey, we had John Lester on the show. He's one of my favorite dudes in baseball for many, many years, and just a gamer. And he talked about wanting to come here to be paired up with you again. But if you look at the numbers over the last few seasons, it's no surprise as he gets older, he's not what he was many years ago. How much does he have left in the tank? What are your expectations for John Lester this year?
You know, for me, I just want John to be John. You know, he knows that. Hey, he competes. He takes the ball. You're going to get 180 innings from the guy, plus. So that's what I love about John Lester. He wants the ball. He wants to help his club win. And he's going to compete. You know, we talk a lot about, you know, he always mentions how his velo and what he used to be, but he knows how to pitch. You know, he's smart. And I think, you know, I think with reuniting with Hickey here, Hickey can help him. You know, we got to get him to pitch down in the zone. We did a lot of work where, you know, we felt like, you know, he was up in his zone a little bit the last couple of years. We got to get him back down in that zone where he's really good. I mean, his cutter's good. His two-seamer's good. His curveball's really, really good. So we just got to get him down in the zone consistently, and I think he's going to help us win a lot of games.
After Lester, that fifth starter spot, a couple guys competing for that. How do you see that race going right now? And just kind of give us a state of the union there.
Yeah, but I mean, they all look good. You know, Joe Ross came in with a little chip on his shoulder. He missed last year. He's so excited to be back. He didn't realize how much he'd missed a game, but he's excited to be here. You know, both you had a rough go last year. He's coming back with a vengeance. And Fetty, who, you know, I thought, you know, last year towards the end, he really started pitching really good. So those three guys are going to compete for that fifth starter spot. We'll see what happens. You know, look, whoever wins the job early, that doesn't mean, you know, we won't use the other guys, as you guys well know. I mean, these guys have not pitched a whole lot. They haven't built their innings up. So they're all going to be used somehow, some way. But, you know, what I do like is they're going to compete, and they're ready to compete, and we'll see what happens at the end of spring.
Yeah, and I think that's a theme all over baseball this year too, Davey, because you're not going from a full season of 200-plus innings that you're building on for guys. I mean, everyone's much lower than they used to be. The average starter in baseball was, as a median, you know, right around 170 innings, and now it's much lower than that. So you may need more starters to get through the season. It's funny. In baseball, we keep hearing that there's only a certain amount of teams that are trying to win right now. You wouldn't know it looking at the NL East. This is an absolute juggernaut with the Mets. The Braves, you guys all vying for this division title. The Marlins made the playoffs last year. The Phillies have spent a lot of money. It's not going to be easy, but that should make it even more fun, I'd imagine.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, I talk about it a lot with my coaching staff, but we got to come ready every day. We got to bring it every day. I mean, our division's really good, and we play these guys a bunch. So we got to be ready for it. You know, with that being said, my focus is not on anybody else but us, you know, and we got to prepare and get ready from day one. You know, I often joke around, but I tell the guys every day, hey, I want to be May 1st ready come April 1st. So we're going to get a lot of work in and get ready to go.
David, love it, man. This is awesome because we're talking about Nationals baseball, dude. I cannot wait for the season. Thanks so much for joining us, man. Appreciate it.
You guys got it. Anytime.
See you soon in person, not through these computer screens, too. It'll be nice.
That's right.
Davey Martinez, the manager of the Nationals.
I'm losing my eyesight with all this stuff.
I know. Too much screen time. We're all dealing with it. Appreciate you, Davey. Be well. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan, getting you ready for the start of the Nationals season. Next hour, Alex Smith just said something about Washington, whether or not they thought he'd make the comeback, whether or not they were pulling for him to make the comeback. We'll get into that on The Fan. Big thanks to Davey Martinez for joining us on Grant and Danny. He gave us some meat on the bone there that we can chew on next hour, including the idea that Victor Robles might bat leadoff this year.
How about that?
Make or break season. Didn't see that coming. Sounds like Joe Ross could have the first opportunity at the fifth starter spot, although that is up in the air as to whether or not he would keep that gig. And they are going to roll with Carter Kieboom at third initially, it sounds like. Didn't get a whole lot of intel on how long the leash is, which you asked about. We'll get into some of that. Are you seeing any of this Tiger Woods news right now, Danny? This is scary.
No, I am not. What's going on?
So Tiger Woods was involved today in a very serious one-car accident.
Oh, no.
Via the Los Angeles County Sheriff's Department. Earlier this morning at about 7:12 Pacific time, the L.A. Sheriff's Department responded to a single-vehicle rollover traffic collision on the border of Rolling Hills Estates. The vehicle was traveling northbound on Hawthorne Boulevard, and it crashed. The vehicle sustained major damages. The images that have come out now all over the Internet of the pictures of the car are scary. I mean, he had to be taken and removed from the vehicle with the jaws of life. The driver and sole occupant was identified as PGA golfer Eldrick Tiger Woods. Mr. Woods was extracted from the wreck with the jaws of life by Los Angeles County firefighters and paramedics. He was transported to a local hospital by an ambulance for his injuries. The traffic investigation is being conducted by investigators from LASD Lomita Station. But apparently the injuries are not life-threatening. He is being treated for his injuries at the hospital. He was the only person involved, the only car involved, so that's good. And it sounds like while he is injured, that he doesn't have to worry about this being more serious than recovering from those injuries, hopefully. But scary looking deal, man. He went head over heels in the car at least once. The car is barely recognizable. You can't even tell what the model of the vehicle is, or if it's a sedan or an SUV. And on top of all that, this all happened this morning. They had to use the jaws of life to get him out. That's like the greatest fear on an everyday basis that you can have, isn't it?
Yeah, that is really scary stuff. God, I hope he's okay. That is terrifying. Because usually, you know, a car's that mangled up and they've got to rip the steel apart to get you out of there. Usually means this is a pretty serious situation. So, goodness gracious, thinking of him and his family today, that is terrifying.
Yeah, just brutal. So that news just breaking and is all over the place. I mean, he is, I would have to guess, if you're talking about the most important athletes of the last quarter century. I mean, Jordan goes down as the greatest of all time. Clearly, I would say most of his heavy lifting was done before the last 25 years. Last 25 years, just as a benchmark, LeBron is in that combo. Kobe is in that combo, who we lost tragically, obviously. Mm-hmm. LeBron is right there with those guys and anybody else because of the individual nature of golf, just in terms of being globally recognizable, what he did for the game. I mean, I know he started right at the turn of the millennium, but that qualifies as the last 25.
Surely, yeah.
Short list, definitely a Mount Rushmore. And I know you're not a golf guy, but you can't be all that more impactful than Tiger Woods.
It's a cultural phenomenon. Impossible to deny the impact. I mean, we're talking about a golfer in the same way that we talk about Michael Jordan and LeBron James. You can't deny the cultural impact. Of course you can't. My shtick about wanting golf to be relegated back to its status as the seventh most popular sport in the country, put that aside for a second. It's you'd be, you know, willingly obtuse to say anything other than that guy had a absolutely giant shadow that he cast over the sporting world. I mean, he's up there, global guys like Lionel Messi and others. I mean, he's in that Mount Rushmore, that first conversation when we talk about athletes over the last 25 years. A, for their accomplishments. B, for their larger-than-life presences. That's, man, oh, man. I'm looking at the pictures now. I hadn't seen them. I was, you know, doing everything but man, oh, man, is that scary. Goodness gracious.
So you mentioned Messi. I think he definitely, you got to throw a soccer player into that, I would think. He or Cristiano Ronaldo recently, like those guys probably. But if you're talking about the last couple decades in soccer, they're right there. Early on, you know, maybe going way back 15, 18 years ago in the 25 years, David Beckham was everywhere and everyone talked about him.
Culturally, sure, absolutely.
The quality of the player probably is those other guys, just culturally a phenomenon. But if you're putting Kobe and LeBron and those types of players here in America into the conversation, Albert Pujols for baseball maybe, I guess, who announced via his wife yesterday this will be his final season. Usain Bolt because of what he did in the Olympics. Maybe Michael Phelps if you're looking for individuals. I'm looking for a tennis player. I guess Federer, who's got close to 20 Grand Slam titles.
Yeah, Federer, Nadal, Joker, somewhere, one of those three guys, probably Federer, yeah.
All in that discussion, but that is absolutely petrifying to see the reaction to just what happened with the car and the fact that they'd used the jaws of life. So fingers crossed. We have not heard yet on the injuries. We're not going to speculate anything when it comes out officially. I'm not going to just be reading off people's Twitter accounts as to what happened. We will pass it along for you here on Grant and Danny. Speaking of very serious injuries, Alex Smith was interviewed by GQ, and he talked about the Washington football team's feelings on his return last year.
Bombshell.
This is pretty stunning. Yep. He throws a lot of shade at the team, to be completely honest with you. We'll read those quotes. We'll get into it next right here on Grant and Danny.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.